Like, I want you to think about how you've been having some back problems recently, and that I think those started around the time you started sitting on this chair.
No, my back problems are from being sedentary.
Can we record the podcast?
Yeah.
Welcome back.
On that note.
Episode 37 of A People's Guide to Publishing. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher and the author of A People's Guide to Publishing.
I'm Ellie Ballou, and I'm the editor who doesn't care about commas.
And I'm Sydney Grubb. I am operations manager at Microcosm Publishing. I run our internship program, and I am young. only been in this industry a very short while.
I've only
worked at one publishing company. I have little life experience, but I speak with authority.
So that is a strength.
And we are all, like, collectively, the three of us are in charge of making hiring decisions. So
today, we're going to talk about the issue of diversity in publishing. What does that mean, you might ask? Diversity, I would say even diversity, inclusion, and equity. Microcosm has a mission statement, which is to give readers tools to empower you to change your life and the world around you. We also have a vision statement, which is to change the face of publishing to match the actual readers. And I would just kind of like to hear from both of you about what that means to you as a person who really deeply cares about this and has a personal investment, and also in your specific roles.
I love it. I love a good meaty question. I also love hearing our mission. Every time I hear it, I'm just like, yes, we do that.
And for the most part, it works.
Yeah.
Which is the more amazing part is it's like when I look at most publishers' mission statements, I'm like, it does not say anything.
Yeah, they're just like written in on themselves or... Yeah. They're just too vague about, like, what their actual intention is, and I think that's something that can connect with diversity in publishing, is, like, if you are open about your intention to make change, then people will flock to you who also want to make change, and, like, you put an outward face that expresses that, and it follows. So if you are starting a publishing company, like, it really is important to get that mission statement, your vision statement, like, right and true and, like, bold. And that's probably a first step towards having a diverse company.
The creation of the literary industrial complex in 1989 at HarperCollins, when News Corp bought the company and then bought so many divisions and imprints, and that how that really consolidated a very myopic thought, and the product of that was eliminating all of these, you know, really homogenized thinking in publishing. And for whatever reason, even though we knew then that it was women over 50 that were the key purchasers of books,
reading,
they really focused on very affluent, very white, very male New Yorkers as their key author, which was rather perplexing because you're like, do women want to read that? I don't know. That doesn't seem likely. I didn't really know anything about any of that when I started Microcosm. I didn't really learn about that until I was researching the book, honestly. And so most of what we did was utter dumb luck, you know, that it was like, perhaps, like, self-expression and the kind of editorial choices that we made early on, especially, that pretty soon, you know, by, like, 2002, and I guess even before that, when you see the names that are coming in on the orders, they're not, like, John Smith's, you know? It was, like, very apparent that our audience was primarily female and primarily people of color, you know? And I think that was just who was responding to the kinds of things that we were publishing. And then when I started to go on tour and meet the people around 2002, it was, like, really unbelievable how true that was. That was, like, the vast majority, like, four times the statistical population likelihood of those people being our readers.
I think, the tone of my disposition towards this topic is a lot of just, like, well, duh. Like, yeah. I don't really know what else to say about it that gets more to the point, which is, like, lots of people read books, so your books should not appeal to lots of people, but you should think about who actually is going to read this book. Who do I actually want to read this book? And recognize that if you want to achieve that, then you should get the opinion and the advice of people like that reader. Like, all of it to me and to my generation, I think, is just, like, very... It's all very obvious to us, and I think that's what Joe's getting at, of talking about, like, the industry, yes, was founded by, like, white males, and they, like, made the mistake of not thinking about those connections, but to me, I feel optimistic about this topic. I feel like it's changing even in the big four in, like, small ways, very, very small ways. What did you say, 7%? Growth of diversity in the industry this year?
Yeah, that's the shocking thing. So when they started to record racial makeups of the people that worked in the publishing industry, the first census, I believe, was the 89% white one. And this year we've hit 82% white, which...
Yeah. Wow, that's a big change. And that's outside the margin of error for the first time.
Yeah, and so, I mean, literally it was growing by like 1% to 2% a year, which is the right direction, you know, is probably the kindest thing I could say.
Yeah. But it's still not, like, it is wow, and I think Ellie and I both come from, like, an optimist perspective of, like, wow, yay, that's even bigger than last year. But also, it's not wow enough, like, because I know, I personally know, and Twitter know, like, the way you know people through Twitter and not, you don't actually know them. Hundreds of people of color who want to work in the industry, like, mm-hmm. really want to work in the industry and are passionate and smart and, like, deserve a chance to work at any publishing company they want to, but they're unemployed and they're, like, working unpaid internships and they're confused. And I think that's where I hope people who are not diverse are listening to this episode. and are recognizing that, like, you're only going to improve the experience that you're having in this industry by bringing people around you who are thinking about it differently, because, like, different thought is what creativity is, and to survive in an industry where, like, thousands of books are printed, new books are printed every year, like, you have to get creative. Like, you have to get creative. So that's why Microcosm survived, is because it was, like, a diverse person was, like, I want to make books that appeal to me, and I also want to make books that would appeal to my friends who they don't see books for them. And then everyone was like, oh, me too. You know, if we're not a minority, like, you're not a minority. That's something I've learned recently, is, like, I'm a minority, but I'm not a minority. Like, there's a flock of people that feel the way that I do, that we do about this topic, and, like, everyone just needs to, like, go for it.
So I'd like to, we've had a lot of conversations off camera and over the past year, or really ever, about kind of, like, what does diversity mean and what kind of marginalities are there, and I don't want to talk about that now. Like, I feel like that's a big topic that's interesting, but not necessarily interesting for people to watch us talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, go have that conversation yourself, it's worth having. But I would like to talk about, kind of on a practical level, what are the things that we already do, and what are the, where are the places that we struggle? Not just, like, our metrics for marginality, like, how many authors do we publish who have marginalized experiences, how many people do we employ, etc., but also just improve that experience, honestly, and, like, truly create this vision that we have,
yeah.
rather than just, like, creating a beautiful photo yeah. shoot.
What are we actually doing?
The lack of diversity that has existed in our industry for 130-plus years is that it's, like, a lack of diverse thinking. It's, like, if all of the people are of the same mind, experience, and background, they don't have a diverse set of experiences to draw from, to write about, to, like, consider, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that has been weirdly, like, why we've been so successful. And it's interesting now because that has become very hip to bring that in, which it was not that way, I would say, even 10 years ago. I think it was really, like, the rise of identity politics that brought the interest. And, you know, now I get so many solicitations, like, actually questions to the podcast that are like, I want to hire an illustrator, ideally a black woman. Like, who do you have for references?
And, yeah.
And, you know, and like previously it was like, I would like to hire an illustrator, preferably someone free. Mm-hmm. Who can you refer? You know, whereas like...
Now that's just implied.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is still like a diversity hire because like, you know, hiring poor people means that you will get poor perspectives, which could help you to like price your art. And yeah, I won't get into that. But I mean, yeah, it's definitely like... Unfortunately, that wave of, I would like to hire someone diverse, I heard that will be good for business,
mm-hmm.
then meant a lot of tokenization, and it meant, like, there are people of color in this industry that have, like, really bore the burdens of that, and, like, had super bad experiences, and continue to have super bad experiences in, like, the big four kind of environments. Like, in the corporatized publishing experience, you are a minority, and so, like, people microaggress you all the time. So I really do think that it's important we, like, talk about this stuff. And also, if someone comes to you and is like, I want a diverse person in this role, do you have anyone that you could recommend? Like, A for effort, but, like, you should look out into communities that you're interested in, and you're doing that by asking us because we are a diverse community, I think, is something we've created. But ultimately, like, you gotta get more creative than that, than just like expecting your other white friends to find you a person of color.
So, like, I guess what you're saying is that, like, one of our industry's barriers to diversity is that it's still run by people who maybe
don't have
networks, are only embedded in communities of people who look just like them and have a certain amount of privilege.
Yeah.
So, and, like, attempts to, and, like, we don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put myself in that line. I feel like I represent that here at Microcosm.
Yeah.
I represent the publishing establishment.
You're our token establishment.
our last episode was about my liberal arts
education.
We had
to have one.
Yeah, just one.
But, like, I'd say,
required,
like...
Required by law.
For, So, like, for people like me, I'm like, okay, this is a problem I can identify, and I need to work on solving it. Like, how would you advise us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would advise you to look into organizations like POC in Publishing and Latinx Publishing. You know, these are places that their social media accounts are constantly sharing folks who want work. And, like, you should reach out to those people.
The point is that you have to actually involve yourself in the communities that you want to be involved in so that it's more than tokenizing,
yeah.
You know? And that was the most fascinating thing was when we were at the Next Page conference in New York, we met a young woman that was, like, had just been tapped to launch a diverse children's line for Random House, and we were like, oh, how's it going? And she's like, I don't know, I start on Monday. And we were like, it's like so wonderful, but then also so perplexing, and you're like, what is the chain of events that led to this moment happening?
Yeah.
And, like, I guess it's like, you know, and that's the real thing, is, like, publishing is so networking and your network. And I feel like so many times people get brought in because they're trying to bring in their network, you know, and like,
that's interesting.
Maybe mm-hmm. she's great and it's like working out for her and she's respected and all that, you know, and maybe not. We haven't kept in touch, but it is like, you know, I think about that encounter, like, maybe as the most typifying for how I, like, think about this issue. Because, you know, and I think about, like, the way that just about everybody I know has been treated at one time or another because of, like, some marginal aspect of their identity.
Application process is, to me, something that lends itself to building community. So we hire pretty much strictly from our intern pool, and our intern application process is open and available in a lot of different places, and we're continuing to try and, like, spread the word about it through networks I talked about, like sharing on Twitter when Latinx Publishing's account says post your internship here, like, do things like that, be present in those kind of spaces because a lot of young people are there. So there's that, and then being sensitive in, like, being sensitive in your application process and in your questioning process and interviews is so important. Like, I perceive interviews as a space for me to better understand the person that I'm interviewing, not to, like, test them on if they're the right person for the role, because ultimately, like, an intern is just someone that is going to learn from you. You know, you're going to get what you can out of their free labor. But also it's about them learning, and I want to make sure our environment is a place where they feel safe to learn. And so I need to, like, hear them and hear what makes them feel safe. And people are, when you create an environment like that in your interview process, like, people will be real with you about what they struggle with and their, what they face as a person of their identity, whatever it may be. And then you can foster community.
My innovation to that interview was to ask what the most difficult thing that somebody has been through, because then you're really cutting to the chase of the, like, have you had your life handed to you? Have you had to struggle? Have you had to work for it? You know, like, what did it take to get to this point?
Yeah.
You know, and that's dynamically very different from person to person.
Since I took over the process of running our internship program from Joe and I started doing the interviews, I now have that section be one. I section the questions out based on, like, traditional questions about, like, why do you want to be here? What do you want to get out of this experience? Like, how'd you find out about us? What jobs have you had before? Like, what did you learn from those experiences? And then I get more into, like, how do you work? You know, that section to me also is where I'm looking for neurodiversity in a way that's towards, like, is this person going to struggle to work, to be in a traditional workplace environment, and how can I, like, accommodate them? So this is a point in the internship process where I ask about multitasking. Like, is multitasking something you're comfortable with? What's your perspectives on multitasking? And that's where I get people who will self-share that, like, I really struggle with that. I have ADHD, or I have bad anxiety. You know, like, people will be willing to share if you, like I said, create that atmosphere. And then at the end of the interview, I choose if I'm going to ask that question now. Because I feel like the way I've got it structured now means that people are going to share more of themselves, and then I can tell. Like, this, the examples they give, the stories they tell me, let me know if, like, this is a person who has unchecked privilege, or this is a person who knows their identity and therefore will be able to understand other people's identities. We also ask really specifically in the internship application process, have you ever worked with someone with physical disabilities or social emotional difficulties? Like, I ask that question in every application, and that is a big way to kind of get at the heart of what has happened to you in your life. Or sometimes I'll ask, what are your values? Like, what are values that are really important to you?
Advice. Screening, so to get it outside of your network or people that are just related to other famous people, or, you know, to really, like, you want to create opportunity and education, you know, whether you're, like, fishing for authors or whether you're, you know, building a staff or, you know, like, you know, think about every opportunity that you have to grow the pool of knowledge. And because, you know, those are the people that want it real bad, and so then they will do the most meaningful work, honestly, most of the time.
Yeah.
You know? And that has been the thing that really struck with me, that, like, you know, there's definitely times where, like, somebody seemed like a total shoo-in, but I think they had never really had to try in life. So then they get here, and then they didn't try, you know. But they're, like, obviously really smart, you know, they just don't want it. And then there's lots of other times where somebody really struggles, and then they put in the work, and they do amazing things, you know.
One of the things, a hypothesis that I have, is that as we've grown and become more prominent, and as more and more people are finding out about us outside of sort of the original microcosm bubble, our submissions pool, the pool of people that are making themselves available to us without us trying, are becoming less diverse. Is that, would you
I
say?
I don't think that's
interesting.
True. I don't.
I think it might be true.
Because, like, I see our submissions come in, you know.
Oh, we always got submissions that were, like, outside of our bubble.
But it was I think there might be truth in what you're saying. I think the data will prove you otherwise. But I think that, like, because we have more of a... We're getting more and more in the public eye all the time. Like, we're leaving the niche and getting into the mainstream every now and then. Like, I do think people are coming into our submission box, they're coming into our application pool, who they want to just be a part of this cool thing that they just heard about, and they go for it and they apply, and then we're quick to be like, that's not what we're looking for. The majority of our industry is white women. Like, that's the number one group of people that work in publishing and all the different spectrums. Booksellers, it's a lot of white women. And I get almost all white women every application season. Like, when I interview, it's a lot of white women.
And that's also the majority of...
writers.
That is the majority... Well, the curious thing is that the majority of published authors are men.
Yeah.
Which is perplexing. And I would say that the majority of pitches we get are also men.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's what Ellie's getting at is, like, the majority of people that submit to us and apply to work here are either men or white women. Like, so we are seeing the majority as we grow. And I don't know if it's growing with our growth, but I know that that happens to us too.
I'm going to revise my question.
Yeah, do it.
We used to get, like, very conservative Mormon white men submissions.
Wow.
We used to get, and, you know, and that was 20 years ago. Like,
wow.
So,
okay,
like,
yeah. So it hasn't necessarily changed.
Yeah,
it's just consistently that way.
It is eerie how many people, like, move into self-interest, and they're like, a publisher.
Yeah, and, like, how many people apply for our internship without looking at what we sell. Like,
always, no matter what faces we show the world, no matter what we do and who we are, still the majority of applicants that we get for our jobs, our internships, and the submissions that we get are from people who are kind of skew more towards the top of the power dynamic in this society.
Yeah.
And in the industry, at least.
Mm-hmm. In the industry, yeah. So, like, white women, white men, not necessarily disabled or from any kind of marginalized background, though, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. So, and I think that's what you were getting at earlier when you were saying that people complain that they have trouble finding people that aren't like them, is because, like, if you are passive about it, that is...
What comes to you is...
The people who have the confidence and the chutzpah and the...
The means.
The education and the means.
Yeah.
To do the thing. So, like, you really have to be intentional, like you've already said this, and try. So can we just end this by, like, giving some, like, rapid fire tips?
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
For, like, how to swim upstream.
Mm-hmm.
How to, like, not just have a better filter for what is coming into you to choose the best ones, but how to, like, really improve the whole pipeline all the way from the source.
Well, I always thought that, like, we show our values so well, and we show our focus and our topical, like, subjective interests, like, very prominently, much more prominently than most publishers.
Yeah.
And I always thought that that would sort of filter out applicants for jobs, internships, manuscripts, etc.
Yeah.
But it never does, because the people that are entitled and privileged, they don't look at anything other than, like, they go immediately to the, like, job application submission guidelines.
Yeah.
And they don't look at the rest of the website. So it needs to not only show it everywhere, it needs to say it there.
Yeah.
And I was adverse to this at first because I thought that was, like, patronizing and insulting. But then at the end of the day, I'm like, right, if you're used to being discriminated against constantly for no reason everywhere you go because of dominant values in society, then, like, you do notice that, because you're like, okay, then at least these people say they're not going to discriminate against me, and maybe they won't. You
snaps.
Know?
All the snaps. I 100% agree with what you're saying.
So, and that, like, and it was amazing how much difference that made.
Like, yeah, you can read our website for the way we say that in a better way, but, like, say it. Like, be willing to put it out there that that's what you're looking for, and realize that, like, That's not going to offend all of the majority people that are still going to apply, because the way that it works is that people just Google publishing company in Oregon or publishing company in Pacific Northwest, and then they just reach out to everyone on the list. Like,
yeah, and also, like, if you are willing to come out and be, like, if you're Black, you're Indigenous, you're a person of color, you're transgender, non-binary, or you have a disability, then people know they can be comfortable saying to you that they have
those things.
That is who they are, and that comes back to what you were saying about like really hearing where people are coming from as being the first part of building that relationship.
The people that have been used to being treated unfairly tend to be the longest lasting, because once they find somewhere that is respectful, then they don't want to go nowhere, because they're like, okay, I've never really had a relationship like this, so it works both ways, you know. And I think the other thing that we did that was successful was, like, we have steadily reached out and involved ourselves in things that I guess you would call marketing, but more like putting ourselves outside of our bubble, and ourself being the singular microcosm or the plural microcosm, was of going and being involved, you know, just like everything from like having a table at a convention to involving ourselves in organizations to, you know, I guess even being involved in things like that on social media to, you know, basically becoming a part of other things that helps the awareness of us to spread, but also prevents us from just existing in a myopic bubble where, like, we aren't hiring just friends and family. We're, you know, it's, like, sort of our job to, like, hire the best people, but to actually hire the best people, not just hiring the best people that, like, we have in our Rolodex.
Yeah, I think go where no book has gone. Like, if your book would appeal with people who love to be at state fairs, like, have a table at the state fair. Like, I don't know. Like, think about your book.
Go to the state fair with caution.
Yeah, we worked out that state fairs are not where people that we're, like, cool on the same page with are. But if you're sometimes that happens.
To a conservative audience, it's very interested in the regionality you're in.
I was reaching, but I'll give you the example that we do. So we recognize, like, roller derby is a dope community of people, and we were like, what if we went and hung out with the roller derby people? Like, I bet they would like our stuff. Or maybe one of us had a friend that was like, I do roller derby and I buy every microcosm book. And so for the last couple years we've been going to RollerCon. I went to a local one in Eugene by myself, and it was the best time ever. Like, go to your people as kind of like a way to put that, and like, put yourself in front of the people you want to see and you want to come back to. You like, get creative. It's like that. Up a little bit.
And I felt weird the first time we did roller derby, because we don't have direct involvement in roller derby. Like, it's not, I learned to roller skate from Derby Girls, which I will forever be thankful of, but it's not like a community I have like constant like annual investment in, other than going to this event. But they so embraced us, and then we started getting book pitches from them. And because they had seen us at this event and looked at what we did and, like, given it honest thought and felt like we were part of them, you know.
That's exactly how it works.
And I feel like that is, like, a diverse community, as well as, like, many other kinds of diverse communities that we are a part of.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like that, thinking bigger, you know, we're definitely the only book publisher at those events, let's be clear.
Yeah.
But, like,
and we love competition / community / friends. Like, if you have, come hit us up.
And there's lots of other events like that. Like, we did, we do the peer mental health community events, like, such as Peerpocalypse in Seaside, Oregon. A wonderful event we were just talking about. We're expanding to 3 tables next year.
Yeah.
We would be less lonely if other publishing companies came there. But, you know, if you
and maybe a way to adopt this advice, too, is, like, if you're a really small publisher, like, see if a vegan bake shop would have your author come speak. Like, other places do promotions than just bookstores. Like, so think about where people would want to hear about your author's book. Like, get creative about how you're networking. Like, how you're partnering with people in communities. Like, think about the way that a publisher is meant to be a microphone for a concept, for a voice, for a story, and then aim your microphone different places.
Like, strategically.
Yeah.
Rather than passively.
Yeah.
And then I would say, like, for my fellow, like, white, relatively privileged people, like, do the work on yourself, because you definitely have blind spots, you know? Like,
a very quick shout out to the final tip, very important, especially if you are a person with various privileges, is to do the work, like, figure out where you might have blind spots and how you can address them. And some book recommendations are...
If You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Oluwa. So good. Everyone must read that book. Or listen to the audiobook. Audiobook is so pleasant. The chapters are like 15 minutes. So, yeah. Cheers, everyone.
Visit us at microcosmpublishing.com. Thanks so much for joining us once again on People's Guide to Publishing, the podcast, episode 36. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher.
I'm Ellie Blue, the editor who doesn't pay attention to commas.
And please send us your questions so we can answer them on future episodes. And please, please do give us those reviews on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed. 5 stars, if you please. And have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
You can find us on the internet at microcosmpublishing.com or microcosm.pub if you want to keep it short and simple. You can also find us on Twitter at microcosm, on Facebook at microcosmpublishing, on Instagram at microcosm_pub, and here in Portland on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.